Hello and welcome to the Narrative First podcast, the only podcast where story is king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode 66, when it all finally clicks into place. Welcome back, everyone, to another week of story structure and story analysis. I figured since this is episode 66, Order 66, I can't believe that's actually something that's a part of my life. Why did that ever have to happen? I figured I'd make this one short and sweet as punishment for Order 66. The intention is to make it short and sweet. And the reason for it is because I'm way super excited about new features that I'm putting in the Narrative First Atomizer. And primarily, last week I was talking about the drag and drop for the different scene construction for the story builder. And now this week, I'm putting in the ability to upload your story form so that you can work on it in Dramatica, figure it all out, and then be able to upload it into the Atomizer and do whatever you want to with it. So it's extremely, extremely exciting. And because of that, all I have time for is to record podcasts. I don't even have time to actually edit them. This one will probably be out in about 3 or 4 weeks. And by then, I'm sure there'll be something else that's going on. But I just want to make sure that I keep up the routine of recording the podcast. And besides, last night was the Dramatica Users Group for Pretty Woman, which is the Julia Roberts, Richard Gere, big romantic film from the 1980s. And I just wanted to explain my experience with it and hopefully give you a better idea of how Dramatica works when it comes to story, when it comes to narrative. If you take a look at the Discuss Dramatica forums, in the last week or so, there has been a big discussion on whether or not a Dramatica story form is actually objective. And I still feel like this is a confusion over what I use as objective and subjective, and it's not the actual story form itself, but rather what the story form is looking at. And for most people who go in to write, and whether it's a screenplay or a novel, the fun part is, you know, getting to imagine the whole thing and becoming the characters and all the stuff that goes into actual writing, the fun stuff of writing. And from what I would consider to be a subjective point of view of the narrative dynamics and thematics that go on in a story, Dramatica is primarily from outside of all that. It's not even the experience of experiencing a story. It's about looking at it from a different point of view. In the Dramatica book, there's the great analogy about the battle on the field and how the overall story is the general up on the hill looking at it. That's great when you're first coming to it and you're first being introduced to four through lines and you're trying to figure out, well, what exactly does that mean? Oh, they're just different perspectives. Okay, well, then I assume each of these perspectives when I go in to actually tell my story. And that's not true. It's just an analogy to describe different points of view on the same thing. The Dramatica story form, it's not real. It's not real life. A story structure is not something that actually happens. It's something that we apply to life's events and things that we see in order to get meaning from the things that happen. Events and situations and circumstances, they're all inherently meaningless. And so what we need to do is to create meaning. And we create meaning through our own processes of problem solving and justification. We put that on stuff that happens all around us and we make up stories. The Dramatica theory of story actually gives you the code or the framework of how that process works. As Chris Huntley, one of the Dramatica co-creators, was saying last night at the meeting, when you look at a story form, it's the whole thing all at once. In reality, it's an instant. It's everything. You've gone through all the different processes, all the different ways of looking at this problem. You've seen them spatially, so you know how they're all arranged with each other, but then you've also gone through it temporally, and it's all in an instant. It's just laid out in story form so that it's in a sequential order, so you can't just do it all at once. In a story, you need to like, well, this is chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, but really it's just like chapter. It's like all of that all put together into one single thing. The Dramatica story form, it combines space and time. That's the really cool part. It's got it all wrapped up into one. And the meaning is the combination of those two put together into one seamless appreciation. They're all called appreciations because it's really just about appreciating what it is the author is trying to say with their work. It's not the fun stuff. Like if you read Save the Cat or you watch a documentary on Hero's Journey or pretty much any of the other really fun screenwriting books, it's not about that. That's all the fun stuff. Dramatica isn't fun, but it's accurate. It's what's actually going on there. And you need to have both. So in that discussion on the boards, the question is whether or not the actual Dramatica story forming process, if it's actually objective in nature, if the analysis process that we participate in, if you're not aware of every second Tuesday of every month for the last 20 or so years, we get together. We used to screen the film right beforehand, but most people watch it the week or weekend before. And then we all get together and sort of go back and forth and find out what the most accurate story form is based on our understanding of the Dramatica theory of story. The challenge is to have 6 or 7 Dramatica story experts go off and do story forms on their own and then come back and see who has the same sort of thing. I know, speaking from experience, that typically we all get within 80%, 90% of what the actual story form is, but there's always, we all have blind spots. I mean, that's what makes us human, is we can't see everything. And the great part about doing it together as a group is the person that's sitting across the way who maybe understands the story driver better than you in a narrative. Chris never really picks the main character growth story point, because that's a blind spot to him. But I know another story expert where that's his wheelhouse. Like, he just knows it right away. Oh, that's what it is. So the great part about getting together is everybody covers up everybody's blind spots and you're able to be more successful, be more effective using Dramatica as the baseline. It's a really, really fun process because you're forced to really think about what it is you're saying. You have to really defend where you're coming from, and to then be challenged by somebody else who sees things a different way, and then they have to come back and prove their point. The cop-out is always, well, that's just how I see it. This is how I see the story form. And there's likely a couple different story forms for each film. Unless there's different arguments being made, trust me, there's only one story form. And the way you know when you have the right story form is when it all clicks into place. And I'm telling you, there's a moment when you finally see everything, and it really is like Neo being able to read the Matrix, when you're able to look at it and just know, oh, that's the story form. And after the break, after the update, I'll explain what that experience is like. As mentioned at the top of this podcast, the greatest updates are the updates to the Atomizer itself. The updates to the Atomizer are amazing. They're so cool. And what I'm doing is I'm taking what it is I do consulting when I consult with other writers, and I'm taking that whole process and putting it all online so that you can do it yourself. So that if you can't, or, you know, maybe you don't want to consult with me, which is crazy because I really know story and I can really help you out. If you want to do it on your own, I'm pretty much putting all the processes that I go through, all the different things that I work with writers and directors to get their stuff out, I'm putting that into the service itself. The biggest thing last week, as I was talking about the story builder, and I thought it was fun because there's that ancient old screenwriting software that even I bought back in the early 90s called Story Builder. So I have my own story building window. It's a dream come true of mine where you can actually now, wait for it, it's 2018, you can drag and drop different sequences in different orders. And it's great because I've anchored story drivers to the end of each signpost, each structural signpost, because you can't move those. Those are what set the next thing. You can't do a story driver one and then go into the influence character signpost one. You have to move on to signpost two stuff. And all that's integrated in. And then I even when you go to actually get the outline, the whole point of it is to have you know, everybody always asks me, well, what do I get at the end? The whole point is to have a 12, 15 page outline treatment of what it is that you're trying to write about that you can hand off to your agent. It's based on the same one that I've used to hand off to agents or to producers, essentially just describing the entire story in 12 to 15 pages. So what I do is, even though in the story building window, you know, you have the four structural acts, when it comes to the actual thing, I just put it the typical three-act structure that everybody knows of. Even though before I was really clever about it, where I would split it up, you know, well, this is only a two-act film or this is a three-act film. I think that is just more confusing than it needs to be. So I got rid of that part. Maybe I'll put it back in another time. Being able to download that and obviously be able to do all of those things. So the really exciting part, besides having really pretty colors in there now, is that you can move stuff around. Oh, it's so amazing. But then what I'm working on right now, this very second, is the ability to just upload a Dramatica story form. So you'll just print out your story form, story engine settings, drag that into the animizer. It's going to munch it up, figure out where all the different things are, and then you'll be able to do it from there. Because right now, you can only build a story based on other story forms that have already been done. And that's why I keep, every week, keep adding new and new story forms to keep building up that knowledge base. So now, if you can't find one that fits, you'll be able to bring that into there and build your own narrative argument, which I think is the really most important part of understanding what the story form actually is. The story form isn't like describing your story. It's telling you what your story is about. So if you can describe that in the sentence that I have on every single story form there, you know, the narrative argument, if you can actually build that yourself and see, oh, okay, and really just internalize it, then when you go to write your story, you'll know exactly what it's all about. So these are all things that I'm really super excited about. And now my new catchphrase is super excited. Being able to build all that and get it out really quick is, it's great. I just love being able to keep updating it. And I love, there was something I saw on Twitter yesterday about how code being finished is like the lawn being mowed. It's always needs to be mowed. And so it'll always be improved. And I love being able to provide that to everybody. Dramatica is so complex and so sophisticated that you can get lost in trying to understand what it is. Again, if you go to the boards, a lot of people get lost trying to reinterpret it into a way that really that's not what Dramatica is about. So the atomizer there is like a tool so that you can understand a practical use of it, like to be able to actually use it to do something. So by the time you hear this podcast, those features will already be out. They'll be all refined. Everything will work. So make sure you go to app.narrativefirst.com to register and start using the atomizer. It's the very best way to apply the Dramatica theory of story to your next writing project. When do you know when it all clicks? When does it all finally fall into place and you just have that feeling where you know, oh, this is the story form. This is the actual story form. You don't continue to fool yourself into thinking, well, everybody has their own opinion as to what a story form is and mine's just as good as yours. It's not. So how do you know? This month's film for the user group meeting was Pretty Women. You know, I've seen the movie a couple times in the past, but I haven't seen it in a really long time. And I meant to see it over the weekend. And we put up the trailer on iTunes, watched it two or three times, looked at each other. Do we really want to watch this film again? Do the kids really want to sit through this? And instead we picked Daddy's Home 2 because Will Ferrell's my favorite. And as a stepdad, I can relate to pretty much everything in those films. So yes, even though that was a 17%, completely enjoyable, no story form, it just is funny. And so we didn't watch Pretty Woman. I thought it would be fun to see if I could figure out the story form without having seen the film in probably 20 years. And it turns out I was able to. And all I was going off of, I went off the trailer and I went off my memory of the experience of seeing the film. And there's something that Chris has explained, and this is the first time that I've experienced it from like a major distance. You know, you just, if you want to find the story form for your story, just wait 15 years and you can come back to it. The more distance you put between the experience of the film and your reflection on it and trying to understand the story, or even if it's your own work, the more distance you can put between that, the less you're apt to fall into the trap of the storytelling, of being wrapped up in the experience of it. All you're faced with, all you're left with, are the key story points, the key moments, the stuff that is the most important when it comes to the actual structure of the narrative, what the narrative actually means, what it's communicating. And in the case of Pretty Woman, that was really clear. There were some clear moments, key moments in my head that just stood out. And I went off that to kind of build the story form in my head. And just sitting on the couch, because I was trying to determine again whether or not I should before I show up. And I started to figure out my head, looked at the atomizer to figure out all the different, how everything's hooked up. And yeah, okay, there's a story form there. I didn't know how strong the story form was until after last night. Once we started to go through it and everybody started to point out things that were actually attached to it, it's an amazingly strong story form, and probably something that I'll use as an example to go through and actually do all the gists for it, because it's so pure. It's so strong what it is. My process, I'll just describe the process of story forming in my head, how I was able to come up with the story form for it so that you can understand where I'm coming from and pay special close attention to what it is that I'm looking at. I'm not talking about what the characters are thinking about. I'm not talking about their wants and needs. I'm not talking about silly nonsense like that. I'm just talking about where the problems are from a dispassionate, from just an analysis point of view, like, whoa, okay, let's just look at the conflict here. I'm not in it. I'm not feeling it. I'm not experiencing it. I'm just like looking at it and going, oh, that's what it is. So the very first thing I started out with was the shopping sequence, right? The whole dream, the whole fantasy is I'm a hooker and I'm not a hooker, but I'm a hooker. And Richard Gere comes along, who I guess is super handsome, and he's going to give me all the credit cards in the world and I can go buy a bunch of clothes. And everybody's going to have to listen to me because I got money. That's the thing that stood out the most to me and the thing that I remembered. And of course, that's a major part of the trailer. Instantly, I thought, okay, relationship story through line in physics, because it's about shopping. It's about doing things and their journey towards all the stuff that they do together as their relationship is what where the problems are. You know, that's the substance of their meeting. That's the substance of their grouping is the physics, the physical part of it. And again, physical part. So then this ties into the second aspect of it, which is the physical part. That's a very typical genre setup for narrative. When Dramatica looks at genre, it's looking at the arrangement of the domains of the four through lines, the main character, influence character, overall story, and relationship story. The typical arrangement for a Marvel comic superhero movie is overall story in physics and the main character in universe. That's the same setup that you find in Star Wars, Kung Fu Panda. It's very action adventure oriented setup. Main character in universe because they're a doer and they have something that they're dealing with that's very much about who they are in the world. And then the big picture is all the physics stuff. That's what everybody goes to see the film. So it's almost like you're looking at the story form to see what it is. What are you writing about? Well, I'm writing about all the fun stuff. You're diving into the psychology of all the characters and figuring out this. What is this story exploring? What is it looking at? What is it dealing with? And in a typical action adventure film, it's dealing with a lot of conflict through punching and kicking and fighting, all the physics stuff. Your typical coming of age film, like, you know, last week I was talking about I, Tonya, has the overall story in psychology and the main character in universe. Not that Pretty Woman is a coming of age story, but it is a coming story. It's a becoming story where there is growth in people's relationships and the way they think about things. I guess you could call it a romantic comedy. The overall story is in psychology, and they put the relationship story quite naturally in physics. Because if you're dealing with romance and physics, you're dealing with a lot of physical stuff that goes on, including all kinds of kissing and groping and all that stuff. Not Jason Alexander groping, not that there's anything wrong with that, but the physics of the relationship is what people want to see. That's what they expect. And so that's how the narrative is set up. That's the genre setup of that narrative. Something that's more dramatic or more play-oriented puts the overall story in mind, because you can deal a lot more readily with what people are thinking and what they actually think about stuff, because there's all kinds of monologues and soliloquies, and you know, they say exactly what they're thinking. So that's great for that medium. My first clue was the relationship itself. You look at Pretty Woman and their relationship, the shopping, the dating, I think they're in a bathtub at some time. It was funny because I could only remember certain aspects of it, and I only remembered parts of the story when we were going over story points, where it was like, oh yeah, I remember that part. And it was really fun to see that. So the first inclination was the relationship story is in physics and this genre that fits good in there too. That was my second clue. And then, of course, the third clue, the most obvious, was her being in universe, because she's very much, everybody looks down on her because they just assume, well, this is a hooker, so a prostitute. So, you know, we can prejudge her because based on who she is. Of course, it's Julia Roberts, so I don't see too many prostitutes like that. Not that I see a lot of prostitutes in LA, but she stands out because of her role, her job. So that was my first clue. So the genre setup has the main character in universe, overall story and psychology. I couldn't remember what Richard Gere's mind thing was, but it came out to be super obvious. He has this huge fear of high places, which I completely forgot, but obviously makes sense at the end when he climbs the staircase, which again fits perfectly. It's a natural thing, right? It almost feels like Pretty Woman was written with Dramatica 5 years before Dramatica was even a thing, because the story form is incredible, how accurate it is and how it all clicks into place. So that was my first click, where it's like, okay, these all feel really, really strong. At least three of them that I knew of felt super strong. So the next step down was where the concerns were. Now, so this is the 80s. And so the neon quad, what I like to call the neon quad for the 80s, is the lower left. That is the concerns of future, obtaining, becoming, and innermost desires. That's very much all about the 80s. Right now, we're dealing with the lower right. You know, we're dealing with learning and conceiving, and we're in a present situation that we don't know how the heck to get out. Information overload, right? Conceiving, all that stuff's the lower right. At the turn of the century was when everybody's freaking out about Y2K. That was all about the past, understanding, conceptualizing, and memory. That's when you get all those cool mind game films. Like, well, what the heck's going on here? Perception and actuality. I think the 70s, I forget where, but the upper right, which are the doing, the being, the progress, that's the last one. And I really believe that it's a generational thing, where every 20 years it switches quads. And there's a great new tool that somebody put online where you can actually go through and see the fallout of story forms according to decade, which to me is brilliant. And I want to make that a part of the atomizer, because it's really, really cool. It's awesome. So the neon quad for something like Pretty Woman, I knew it had to be future, just because of my sheer experience of how many times I've seen story forms. We're crossing 400 story forms. Been doing it for a really long time. So I just knew that this was something to do with the future, obtaining, becoming, and innermost desires. I felt that was the strongest. I wouldn't even consider any of the other ones at all. It has to be there. It's Pretty Woman. So then once you know those concerns, that's more of a gut intuition. I'm not sure if that's actually where it clicks into place. The second click, the big one is the next thing, which are the issues. Instantly, I jumped to her being the main character, her issue of preconception. Because if there's anything that she deals with in the entire film, it's all the preconceptions of who a prostitute is, what she's about, and, well, you can't be in here, that whole thing. And I know, without even looking at anything, that underneath preconception, you have hinder and help and control and uncontrolled. And I wasn't really sure which one was there, except to say that in a steadfast main character through line, the steadfast character shares the same focus and direction as the overall story through line. They actually, that's where they connect. That's where the crucial element is between the main character and the overall story, are the focus and direction, because the focus is on the actual work that needs to be done. So with hinder and help, I then went down into psychology, and I know that hinder and help, because they stay in the same place, are under obligation for becoming. And that's when it clicked, partly because of the story form for Nebraska. And I remember at the weekend workshop when we went over it, I didn't think it was an obligation, but then when we actually talked about it more, it actually ended up being there. So when I got to obligation, for some reason, it just clicked like, oh, that's what it has to be. It has to be obligation. But I couldn't remember what the other two elements were with help and hinder. I knew it had to have been, well, I did know the elements. I do know the elements under responsibility are control, uncontrolled, conscience, and temptation. Like I said, I was raised Catholic, so those four are super familiar to me. And I also know from experience that commitment has pursuit, avoid, faith, and disbelief. So that only leaves two choices for hinder and help. It has to have either logic and feeling or support and oppose. I mean, this is really inside baseball, but because I know logic, feeling, consider, and reconsider are underneath approach and obtaining, there's no way that logic and feeling are in the same position in psychology. Elements are always moving around. There are certain elements that stay in place, but logic and feeling are moving around all over the place. It had to have been logic and feeling. While I originally wanted her problem to be uncontrolled, because I just felt like she just wanted to be free, or free, like that's just her drive is free. What that does is if you actually choose her problem is free, that would set his problem to feeling and his change, his meaningful change, into logic. And that's not, there's no way that, it's the other way around. It's very rational. This is how things are done. It's just business, right? That the only part I remember was that he was taking over some business, and it's just business. That's what it's all about. And then at the end, he gets a heart where it's like, oh, that's nice. So logic to feeling. And the only other part I remember is Jason Alexander trying to rape her because there were deals, like Richard Gere was screwing him out of some deal. And that felt like an issue of obligation. And that's when it all clicked into place for me. Because when you set the overall story problem, which also turns out to be the influence character problem, to logic or rational thinking, that sets her problem to control. And that actually makes more sense, because if she was free to do whatever she wanted to do, she would be okay. The problem is when people try to control her. And there's all kinds of references to, you know, well, you think you're giving me everything, but really you're just controlling me the whole time. And that's what sparks her fires if anybody tries to control her, to mess with her. So that's the actual story form that I came up with without even seeing the film for 20 years, without even just seeing the trailer. That's the actual story form that I came up with. And it actually turned out to be the story form that everybody agreed on was the strongest one, the one that encapsulated all the narrative dynamics. The problem with the idea that, well, hey, I got my story form, it's just as good as your story form, is that it will always, always be deficient in some way or another to one singular understanding of the story. There will be one that stands out as being more accurate. For instance, last night there was questions about, well, whether action or decision were the story driver. And I couldn't remember. Story driver is not my strong suit. I mean, I know how it works, but it's not something that I always look towards. And I just let Dramatica pick it. And it's like, okay, well, I'll just go with that. 90% of the time it's action anyways. So I wasn't really sure what that was. And as we were going through, you know, the story driver affects signpost order. So as we were going through the signpost order, I just made the suggestion, well, what does it look like if we changed it to action? Because everybody unanimously agreed that it was decision, which sounded right. So let's see what it looks like with action. So you switch to action and all of a sudden it looks so wrong. You look at the progression, you know, you get this like feeling of time, this time progression through the four signposts. And you just look at these compared to the other setting when you switched it to decision, and there's just no comparison. They don't even, you're just like, oh no, this is the right story. That's the kind of thing, that's why that group dynamic why that's so great, because there is one accurate telling that just feels right. Not only is it logically correct, but you'll be able to come up with rational arguments as to why you see these story points here, but it also has that intuitive feeling, gut feeling, like, oh, no, that feels right. That feels like the actual story. This story form that I'm looking at is telling me the story. Like, I can see it there. It's all there. Just setting those things that we talked about, she's steadfast, right, because he changes. The linear problem-solving style, decision, option lock, success, and good, because it's a very triumphant ending. So there's no darkness to it. Dramatica Story Expert automatically shows you the unique abilities and critical flaws for the main character, the influence character, the catalysts and inhibitors for the relationship and the overall story. And it's amazing. Like, her critical flaw, it says, is attitude, which is great. You know, her attitude, like, whoop, 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 all that stuff is, like, what kind of lessens her ability to actually make anything happen and other people's attitudes towards her. The one that really stood out to me, which was like, this is the story form when it clicks, like, oh yeah, this is it, is the unique ability for Richard Gere character of dream. Like, he represents this whole dream fantasy life. Like, he's the whole dream. It's everything. Like, you could have everything you ever wanted. And that's his unique ability to be able to get her to change. But it gets reduced, it gets minimized because of his critical flaw of obligation, because he's paid for her, right? So she's kind of obligated to be a part of this dream, and that's just yucky. Like, she doesn't want to be a part of that. And this is what Dramatica picked. It's like, well, if this is the story you want to tell, well, guess what? These are the unique ability and critical flaw of the influence character. And that fits so perfectly. That's it. You could not find a better combination of two variations that works as well with all the other story points that you find out in all the other through lines. Eventually, Dramatica forces you into choosing one story form. You can't have everything. You know, you can't explore it all and be super evenly balanced and come up with anything meaningful. It's like, if you're going to tell this kind of story, this is the stuff that you're going to deal with. And these are the variation, the thematic parts of your story that are pushing it and pulling it back. For their relationship story problem of support, the problems in their relationship, what actually creates that relationship is this, like, supportive, I'm supporting you, I'm taking care of you sort of thing, which is good in one respect, but then also like, what kind of relationship is this? And it's not until she actually turns him down and rejects him that their relationship actually resolves and gets to a better place. It's when she opposes at the end that relationship that was built on this sort of like, I'm just going to take care of you and just sort of, you know, the relationship story concern of obtaining, because she's a possession. So that's another thing where if you look at the story form and you're thinking of it like, oh, this is an argument between two people and they're obtaining. What are they trying to obtain together? Why? What is it hard for them to obtain together? You're thinking from the point of view of the characters. That's not it. Obtaining is like obtaining the achievement, the possession of something is a problem in this relationship. So he's actually possessing her and she doesn't want to be possessed. And he likely doesn't want to possess her. Like, but just the fact that acquirement, that grasping on, that holding on is where the conflict is. That matches the conflicts in the other through lines. Like, everything all pulls into one, all wraps up into one complete story. And, you know, their inhibitor of preconception, which again, that also flows into her own personal issues, but also the preconception of like, well, isn't this what we're doing here? Isn't this what we're all about? The Dramatica story form, when it all clicks into place, when you finally see everything all at once, there is just a feeling that you get. There is just this resonance, and it happens with every person. Everybody that goes through the Dramatica Story Expert certification process, which you take a film and you work your butt off trying to figure out the story form. Not only that, then you have to encode every single story point. Eventually, they find, when it all clicks, they find that story form and they're like, oh, that's it. I see it. And when you get to that point, when you're actually able to see story in this way, that's when you're able to separate yourself from the experience of writing your story and to separate yourself from the problems of like not knowing what it is you're doing or where you're going. Part of that is good when it comes to actually writing, because you actually have to write it and actually do the whole thing and actually put it all out there and see what you have. But if you want to actually figure out what it is that it's about, you need to be able to separate yourself from it. Now, you can wait 15 years and it'll be really super clear to you what's wrong with your story. And I'm sure you've probably experienced that. But if you don't want to wait 15 years, you can become more familiar with this feeling of when it all clicks into place, to be able to simply watch a trailer and know the exact story form, to know exactly everything that goes on there. I think maybe there were some people last night who thought maybe the overall story was in physics. And I haven't even seen the film in forever, and I know that that just doesn't feel right. It's like, no, there's all kinds of manipulations going on. It's like, isn't it about takeover, business takeovers and stuff? It's about like manipulating and playing those games in the boardroom or whatever, that kind of stuff that's going on. That to me, that is very clearly psychology. And that, again, just goes back to the understanding of the genres and how domains are arranged in different genres, different kinds of narratives. So when you can get to that place, when you can finally feel it all click, it's really cool. It's really exciting because when you'll pick, like I did, where you pick the overall story and maybe the main character. And then when you start diving down and then you see all the different connections between the different through lines, then when it all wraps up and then you're presented with the story form where his unique ability is dream, like he's dreamy, like this computer program, this theory of narrative says, hey, this uber popular film that launched some people's careers and was a huge rocket hit. Hey, do you want to do the same kind of story? Well, I'm just saying, I'm just a computer program, but I'm telling you, you need to make your influence character dreamy, and he's all about, you know, creating this fantasy life. But if you want to make him seem more like a jerk, have him play into the whole obligation thing. I'm just saying, I'm just a computer program, I'm just making the suggestion, but hey, you might want to do that. And that's when it all clicks into place. So that does it for this week's podcast. If you have any questions about anything, feel free to write to me at narrativefirst.com/contact. Make sure you check out The Atomizer at app.narrativefirst.com. I hope you have a great week of writing. This wasn't anywhere near as short as I thought it was going to be, but hey, that's what happens. Have a great week, and I'll see you next time.